This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. Time now for a look at our top headlines at week's end. We begin with foreign policy. As Secretary of State Hillary Clinton on Friday announcing that there will be a face-to-face direct summit between Israelis and Palestinians here in Washington in just a number of weeks. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas will be here in the nation's capital with a very strong American presence at the meeting as well. Also, the United States has invited neighbors Egypt and Jordan and their leaders, Hosni Mubarak and King Abdullah, respectively, to be present at the meeting. And also Middle East envoy Tony Blair has been invited. It will be a two-day affair right at the end of the month, breaking into September. And Secretary Clinton says, despite the odds, she's optimistic.
It is important that actions by all sides help to advance our effort, not hinder it. There have been difficulties in the past. There will be difficulties ahead.
Secretary Clinton also says she knows that there will be many different hindrances to a final lasting peace agreement, but she says the important thing is that the parties persevere and push through to a final agreement.
Without a doubt, we will hit more obstacles. The enemies of peace will keep trying to defeat us and to derail these talks. But I ask the parties to persevere, to keep moving forward even through difficult times, and to continue working to achieve a just and lasting peace in the region.
The Obama administration's special envoy to the Middle East is former Senate Majority Leader George Mitchell. He outlined what he'd like to see as the result of this summit.
The best outcome is an agreement which results in two states living side by side in peace and security. And that the only way that can be achieved is through direct negotiations between the parties, in which the United States will be an active and sustained participant.
Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu has said repeatedly that one of the conditions necessary for any sort of lasting peace is for the renunciation of terrorism on the part of Islamic groups. And that seems to many experts to be a very long shot, given the fact that one of those groups is now the duly elected leader of the Palestinian parliament, that being Hamas, which now, of course, controls Gaza. Elsewhere in the war on terrorism, more ominous news coming from Iran. First of all, the Russians seem to be on pace for completing the installation of those fuel rods at the Iranian nuclear plant at Bushehr effective tomorrow, August 21st. That was the deadline we heard earlier in the week from former U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations John Bolton for Israel to do something about that plant militarily before the rods are in place, because after that, any sort of attack would unleash a massive spread of radiation onto the Iranian people as well as into the waters of the Persian Gulf. At the same time, Iran has successfully tested, according to recent reports, a surface-to-surface missile today, certainly capable of reaching Israel as well as our troops in both Iraq and Afghanistan. Also on Friday, an infuriating anniversary for many, particularly the loved ones and friends of the 270 people who perished in December of 1988 aboard Pan Am Flight 103 when terrorists detonated explosives on board the jetliner headed to the United States over Lockerbie, Scotland. It was a year ago today that the only man ever convicted of that Pan Am 103 bombing was set free due to Scottish and British officials wanting to show mercy to Abdelbaset al-Megrahi, who was reportedly terminally ill with prostate cancer and would not live any longer than three additional months. So they put him on a plane and sent him back to Libya. Well, a year later, what do you know? Megrahi is still alive, and now doctors say he could live another 2 years at least. Among those furious about this, as well as many other aspects of the past 22 years in investigating this terrorist attack, Bert Ammerman, who lost his brother aboard Pan Am Flight 103, he appeared on MSNBC on Friday and said he could sum up this anniversary in one word.
It's despicable. A year ago to today, I was here stating that this was a release for oil, that there was no moral backbone by the administration. But there hasn't been in this story for the 21-year saga that I've lived.
Ammerman says he's somewhat encouraged by the fact that a number of U.S. senators want to dig deeper into why Megrahi was released. Ammerman says he wants public hearings so eventually the person responsible in the U.S. government for allowing Megrahi to go free will be figured out.
Well, they should be demanding a hearing, and they should bring this the State Department in front of them and ask a simple question. Did anyone in the State Department directly or indirectly be involved in Megrahi's release? Get it on record, and then we'll find something out over the next year, and we then can get perjury charges.
One of the reports that's come out recently is that most doctors associated with Megrahi were not consulted about just how long he had left to live. And another doctor now says he wasn't so sure in what he told the authorities. Not good enough for Mr. Ammerman.
If you got a person that massacred 259 people in the air, and you've got one doctor involved, and our government is not strong enough to state we want more involvement before he's released, please don't insult our intelligence.
Ammerman says he's been frustrated with all four administrations in how they've dealt with this terrorist attack.
When I met with President Bush 41 on April 3rd, 1989, in the Oval Office, he said if this is traced to state-sponsored terrorism, he'd react militarily. He didn't. Clinton bombed an empty silo because President Bush 41 had a threat against him. They tried to open up passports for businessmen for oil. We stopped that. Then I had to watch Bush's son, Bush 43, and Blair welcome Gaddafi back into the international community. And now I got to watch the Obama administration continuously bungle the release of Megrahi. There hasn't been a moral background, Democratic or Republican, in 21 years.
On to the interview front for today. A major protest planned on Sunday morning at the proposed site of a new Islamic cultural center and mosque adjacent to Ground Zero. My interview with Herb London, president of the Hudson Institute. Herb is also a longtime New York City resident. Can be heard at worldnetdaily.com or dateline.radioamerica.org. While you're there, you can also hear my conversation with Dr. Larry Hunter, president of the Social Security Institute, who explains why all these ads you've seen with Andy Griffith explaining how great Medicare is just a sham designed to mislead and lie to seniors, orchestrated by the Obama administration and AARP. And he thinks that Mr. Griffith himself is actually an unwilling accomplice in all of this. You'll also hear my conversation also at worldnetdaily.com and dateline.radioamerica.org. You can hear my conversation with Jim McDougald. He is with me to explain his new book, Unsustainable, which points out that the U.S. debt, not just over $13 trillion, more like $120 trillion. He'll explain the discrepancy and why it's vital that Americans understand just how much their federal, state, and local public officials are stealing from them and not explaining what the money's going for. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.